Sleeping bag for one is more of a guideline than a rule. Written by Toffee Cape, narrated by Rhea314. Fandom, the Nine Worlds series by Victoria Goddard. Rating mature, no archive warning supply. Relationship, Artoran Damara, aka Fitzroy Angersell, / Cleofor Kip Madang. I was more shaken than I let on by the knowledge that I somehow forgot meeting Kip before I became Emperor. I knew that I'd lost things, memories, during my 100 years of wandering in dark dreams, and perhaps even in the 14 years before that. One cannot be ground between two stones that long without leaking a bit. But this was the first time I remembered something so important, and it troubled me. What else of such vast significance had fallen out of my mind that I might never recover without serendipitous help? I puzzled over my memories from time to time during my subsequent adventures with Kip. In retrospect, the perspective of my own age and Kip's long, precious familiarity, I knew that the times he'd slipped into my past had all been times when he was appallingly exhausted. It did not ease my mind when I learned about his strange experience of straying into another world as a result of his head injury. How overtired had I allowed my beloved to get that he sometimes experienced symptoms similar to those caused by a mountain falling on his head? I watched him very nervously after our return from the Sky Ocean laid him low, but he remained present, if debilitated at first. Apparently, he could get more sleep on the bare deck of a tiny boat in the middle of the open ocean than in the heart of the Palace of Stars. I could scarcely imagine a more scathing summary of life in that place. It wasn't until we left the Tower of the Zuni Marun behind us that it occurred to me to wonder if he'd been so badly affected by the magic there in part because of having been previously to my tower on Kohele. However briefly and however entangled in my own future wild magic. That only strengthened my inclination not to tell him about any of this. All my recollections agreed that he appeared to retain no memory of the incidents even at the time, and I thought it most likely that his mind shed the memories of tumbling back and forth through time and space to protect itself, like a mental version of his body's reflexive flinches when I spoke words of power. Far be it from me to interfere with something that protected my Fanoa. We rested in Basil's Inn after the Harvest Festival, and then set off across Alinor with our friends. I found I didn't mind the cool weather, for it drove us to bed down together as a matter of course. And what could be better than Kip curled sweetly in my arms, whispering secrets back and forth in a cocoon of warmth? I found, and I think he did too, that repetition of the arrangement reinforced our closeness and helped us believe in it enough to relax a little. It was into this cozy security, bundled together around our company's campfire with multiple layers of fabric between and around us, that I finally said one night, "It's come to my attention that you and Gilly used to be engaged or something like it. I've recently, and with great delight, become something of an obsessive expert on the feel of Kip's body tucked against mine. More so since recovering my early memories of a mysterious, handsome, mostly incoherent older man who shied away from touching my skin yet looked at me with a most poignant relief and leaned against me through a blanket with a trust so absolute it put a lump in my throat. Now his muscles betrayed slight tension, but not necessarily outright discomfort. Did I never tell you about that? It was long ago, and not quite that serious. We don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. It sounds like you want to." There was a note of very mild censure there, which I deserved. I was trying to shake the habit of avoiding asking direct questions, but I still backslid like this too often. I rubbed my hand up and down his back, apology and self-soothing both. "I'm keen to know what she did wrong to lose you." Which still wasn't literally a question, but at least counted as admitting to wanting an answer. He snorted softly. "I was the one who lost her, by not being what she wanted." I hugged him to me at that, for the sudden echo back to our near disaster of a conversation on the Vaha in the Sky Ocean, which left us both almost as scalded as we were exhilarated, and for the way my own feelings were now thrown into even more disarray than during the conversation with Gilly earlier in the day. It hadn't even occurred to me that it might have been she who did the rejecting. I felt a confusing mix of outrage, what was wrong with her, and gratitude, because if she'd kept him, Kip wouldn't be mine now. Was it about sex? It must have been. Gilly was plainly very attracted to her husband, Toucan, and they went off together regularly. They were discreet about it, but I, of all people, can recognize the look of someone skulking away for a tryst or strutting back from one. But what tryst could be worth more than the incomparable privilege of Kip's regard and loyal company and affectionate... Kip went on. No, that's unfair of me. I lost her as a lover and future wife, but by her wisdom we kept each other as friends. And I don't know if we would have kept that if I'd stayed and let all my ambitions rot. Fitzroy? I was now the one whose muscles betrayed considerable tension. As a lover, I repeated numbly. You were lovers. Well, yes. You take lovers. In all honesty, it's probably more accurate to say that they take me, but Fitzroy, you know this. You personally interceded to keep me from being executed alongside Adelia Elaopeja. What did you think she was doing with me? Having all her attempts at intelligence gathering foiled single-handedly? I knew, all the investigators at the time agreed, that Kip hadn't even realized she was a spy. He was just so relentlessly competent and professional that she could have gleaned more useful crumbs of information by buying drinks for the cleaning staff. I'll have you know it took both hands, he said primly, which set me muffling giggles into his shoulder. He shook with silent chuckles of his own, and when I could trust myself not to disturb the others and looked at his face again in the firelight, he looked very pleased with his little joke, or perhaps by having made me laugh with it. I love you, I said. And I love you, he answered. We grinned at each other, rolled up in blankets beside a campfire, in a forest with the hard ground lumpy beneath us. The freedom of it sparkled over my skin. Kip won that freedom for me. I didn't win the right to say I love you to him by being a coward. I'm beginning to think I didn't ask the right questions before. No, you did, he said firmly. We got the most important things figured out. But perhaps we were too frightened to ask enough questions, or to share enough of that part of ourselves. He took a deep breath and then said, I don't dream of kissing, but I still like it. I enjoy sex the same way I enjoy a nice meal or a good conversation. Since Gilly, I've had a few lovers, all of whom accepted that my priority is you. A few was ambiguous, but implied not very many relationships when spread out over 900 years. I remembered those times when I sent for him at odd hours and he was not in his little room in the Alanoral wing. Perhaps some of those times were when he did visit me, just not the me who sent for him. And, oh, his mind didn't remember, and mine didn't either at the time, but perhaps our bodies did, on that day when I saw Polly again, when I was ready to fly apart and he wrapped me in a blanket and held me as I wept. But that was beside the point. Kip was here with me now, and had just shared a new part of himself, a part he'd offered before and then hastily gone silent about in face of my rejection. How crushing that must have been, to make that offer and then be told it was incorrect. I would slap myself if it would do any good. Indeed, even now his face was shuddering again as he added, If enthusiasm means wanting sex as much as everyone else seems to, thinking about it as often as they do, then no, We're not compatible in that way, and should say no more about it. It doesn't, I said hastily, before he could wound himself any more with a memory of my past words. It doesn't have to mean that. Though I did want him very much, for my part, a sweet fierce ache that, even unfulfilled, made me feel as alive and awake to myself as any random tumble in a hayloft when I was 19.
You compared it to a nice meal?
Yes, he said cautiously.
Well, I certainly enjoy sharing meals with you.
It was, I reflected, a form of egotism to turn down the prospect of something I wanted just because he would enjoy it differently than I. At least, now that I trusted he would enjoy it. Although...
But what if the cuisine turns out not to be to your liking? Have all your previous lovers been women?
They were, but I consider that incidental.
He licked his lips, which was something I usually stared at openly anyway, but in this context I found scorchingly compelling.
I think you don't need to worry about, those differences being a problem in their own right. The blaze in me flared so hot, I glanced behind myself at the campfire to make sure we hadn't somehow rolled dangerously close to it. We hadn't, so I turned back to Kip and purred.
You think so, do you?
It's an untested theory. He breathed, staring into my eyes. With the fire behind me, they would be the only things he could see. I could see that his pupils were dilated and his mouth was slightly open, and I could feel that he was pressing even closer to me than our bedroll required. For all his well-earned flinching from the word, I could not deny that he looked enthusiastic.
Well, I murmured,
and worked a palm up to his cheek, which made his eyelids flutter and his breath stutter.
Shall we test it?
I would like to, he whispered back, and to my shock, he closed the tiny gap between us and kissed me. I barely managed to stifle my moan. I already knew that Kip smelled like wood smoke, and it made sense that his mouth tasted mildly green and herbal from his teeth-cleaning twig. I likely smelled and tasted much the same, but beyond that, the taste of his mouth in particular was completely wondrously new, and I thrilled to the reality of his kiss, the soft, unhurried motions of his lips, the tremorous puffs of his breathing, the flick of his tongue that was unmistakably inviting. I kissed him deeper, and he opened for me, and deeper still, and he met me with a deepening of his own, mirror and match, until he was sucking on my tongue and I was shuddering against him, too hampered by our clothes and bedding to properly grind, but still able to feel that his cock was also growing excited. I had to break away first, gulping for air as quietly as I could.
Kip, I hissed. Kip.
I'm here, beloved.
Was he ever?
His lips shone wet, color was high in his cheeks, and his eyes were nearly black. Not on my most insecure day could I have mistaken him for anything but aroused and happy about it.
If we are to continue, we need to go for a walk, I said with an effort. Or I will be made to haul water to douse the fire in the morning, which I hate doing.
Now his eyes glinted with amusement.
It's a standing penalty, is it?
I bit my lip and nodded, and he shook with silent laughter again.
Very well.
It's a cold night. Let's take our blankets with us. It was, without question, the least stealthy departure for a tryst of my life. I'd broached the topic with Gilly shortly after we all turned in for the night, and while I wasn't sure about Kip's friends, the Red Company at least were evenly divided between those able to cast themselves into immediate slumber and those who took ages to relax their vigilance. Still, our friends are loyal, and all of them granted us the dignity of at least pretending to be asleep as we unrolled ourselves, clambered to our feet, and attempted to tiptoe deeper into the woods with our bedroll hastily bundled into my arms.
All of them, that is, except Sardit and Rodin, who were on watch and so couldn't pretend. Rodin appeared to be teaching her a card game. As we passed them, Sardit set down her cards and waved her hands and excited little fists near her face, making a muffled squeaking noise. Rodin limited himself to a waggle of his eyebrows and a smirk, but that was still worse.
"Not one word," I warned.
Rodin, who has followed my request to stop treating me as his lord with mildly alarming zeal, said, "Please keep in mind we ride at noon, so you'll want to be in condition for that."
"Have good sex," Sardit called cheerily, as I tugged a spluttering kip out of range.
"What does Rodin even think we're equipped to do?"
"I'm quite sure he watched Khonju pack my new bag."
I patted my trusty, well-behaved second satchel where it rode on my hip.
"And perhaps even furnished some items himself, so he's well aware we're equipped to do anything and everything, my dear Kip."
We were not that ambitious, of course. When I judged us far away enough from camp that no one should have any complaint, I hung a small mage light and sent another one about halfway back. Kip spread our bedroll a little more openly than before, and we climbed back into it, a lot less clothed than before, and then we spread each other out and explored with hands and mouths what was already familiar to our eyes.
"You didn't see me looking," he asked at one point. "At Navikiani, and all those times since."
We were taking a breather, flat on our backs, side by side, with the blankets flung wide to vent the steam of our sweat.
Even if I didn't admit to myself why I was looking, I wasn't subtle.
"One," I said, "I like to be naked far more than most people, and was long accustomed to ignoring some degree of staring even before I took the throne. And two,"
I rolled onto my side to look at him, savoring his shiver as I drew a finger down the ticklish line of his flank,
"I was much too busy trying to hide the way I was looking at you."
"What a pair of fools we make," he laughed, and hugged me down for more kisses while still laughing, which is my new favorite thing. It was slow, surprisingly slow, a languid, luxurious indulgence that was as unexpected as it was delightful for my brisk and efficient Kip. That he was thorough was not surprising, of course, but by the time he finished again, in my hand instead of my mouth this time, having admitted to a charming fixation on my hands that appeared to rival mine for his thighs, and passed out on my chest before I was even finished licking my fingers clean, the weak light of dawn was beginning to filter through the trees.
"I'm afraid I've left you in poor shape for riding after all, my love," I said to him, and got an adorable snuffle back, but by way of sleep deprivation, rather than overambitious use of anyone's behinds.
From the direction of camp, someone clanged some pots loudly enough to startle the birds, and Kip, who twitched, blinked at me once with bleary incomprehension, and vanished. I panicked for the space of several heartbeats, and then started laughing. I remembered this time slip. The last one before I looked out the window of my tower and saw a glint of something gold that I simply couldn't bear to ignore. Finally, a solution to a mystery I'd long forgotten. Why my visitor was naked that time, and who gave him the new necklace strung on such an interesting string, and, most of all, how he acquired all those marks on his neck and thighs. I'd thought at the time that I accepted his appearances and disappearances with all the equanimity expected of me, but looking back, I think that wasn't the case at all, and I climbed out that window chasing more than one kind of treasure. Sure enough, Kip was back in my arms in less than 10 minutes, sleeping soundly once again, smelling faintly of old ritual incense, a blend priceless beyond measure even then, and now entirely impossible to reconstruct at all, to my relief.
"Be strong," I whispered to my past self.
Be strong, Ymarun. You doughy little Savalin Chantling, because it's a longer road than you know. But he's waiting to join you on it, just a little ways up. Only 31 years, give or take 100. It was probably good the 18-year-old yet-to-be Fitzroy couldn't hear me. Numbers like that would have sounded obscene to him. I pulled the blankets tighter around our shoulders and settled in for a nap myself. We weren't leaving until noon. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.